welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Just making sure my volumes are down.
Give it a cup. All right, let's do it. Okay, hello, welcome to episode 403, I think it is, of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal, Sean Orford. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Edward. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good. I am good.
You had a bit of time off your birthday last week, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, it was great. And people were very generous. Thank you for generous people. It was very good.
Did people leave you alone? Did planet Earth kind of let you switch off?
A little bit. I did have a few people, I've come back to a lot of stuff, put it that way. But we're getting there, I suppose.
Yeah, I was going to say, when people need help, they need help, don't they? It's like
The
emergency services can't switch off for a while, can they? So
you're
there if people need you, right?
Yeah. I used to have to do like suicide watch at Christmas, which was always a tough time, and then get to the point where I could share that with other people, because when you're doing those kinds of services, you can't say, "Oh, I'm on holiday now," because it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Cool. Well, it's good to see you. We're back. We're still on the course, aren't we? We're coming on to step six or chapter six about relationships today, right?
Yeah, it's in the book, if you're reading the book, it's entitled The Allowing, like it's the law of allowing. And that's the fundamental of relationships. That's what we're looking at.
Yeah. So a reminder to everyone, we're giving away the book, each chapter of the course. So, if you go to liveinthepresent.co.uk and search for 399, I think was the first in this series, maybe 398. You'll find the introduction. Chapter one.
Yeah.
We'll come on to that sec. But how are you doing? Is life okay then? In the UK, we're kind of, everyone's getting very excited now about schools going back and everything.
I don't want to sound negative, but it kind of worries me when people are rushing out and booking holidays and. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I hope that we can go on holidays, but I'm just aware of the fact that many of the European countries that we would go to visit are far behind in their vaccination strategies than we are. So they're going to be maybe a couple of months behind us, and it's whether we're actually going to be able to get there or not. But hopefully we will.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, there's no harm in booking, is there, I guess? And I've got family members who've booked a couple of overseas holidays, like that act desperate.
If
it comes off, cool. But they're not that hopeful. But you never know, do you?
Well, we had a holiday to Greece booked last year that we couldn't go on, so we moved it to this year, hoping that we're going to go on it. But if not, then it's going to have to be next year. But we will get there.
We got UK holidays planned anyway, so hopefully we'll be able to get up north and get to the caravan. So that'll be
That will be good.
All right, I'm going to share my screen. So you're listening on the podcast, the audio only. Don't worry, we do have some slides we're going to share now, which is kind of part of the presentation Sean gives. So you can find that on YouTube as well. Don't worry if you're just listening with your headphones on. You'll still be able to follow along just fine.
But the recommendation is that you download the chapter and you read the chapter so that it all begins to make sense. So it all fits together.
You don't have to do it each week. You can do it week by week, but this work can take months and months, can't it, Sean?
It can take years sometimes.
Oof.
Yeah. My God. Yeah, I mean, we ran it as a 10-week course, which was very... it was a nice idea.
So it takes a while. Keep referring back. But do you want to set the scene where we are, Sean, in terms of...
Yeah, so what we've done, we've looked at the idea of being able to get into the present moment to create what it is that you want, where you're going from here. So the step number one in what we were doing was about forgiving other people, and that's letting go of stuff holding you back. And inevitably, when you start to look at that, you start to become aware of yourself and the part that you've played in things. So the next bit is about learning to forgive yourselves and maybe apologize to others for the stuff that you've done. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's always that emphasis when you go through the chapters on in forgiving other people. You can't, very rarely you can go to other people and say, hey, I forgive you for being a total sod. Really, it's an internal process. It's not going on out there. And the same with when you're, if you want to apologize to other people, you very often can't do that because that just creates more problems. So it becomes an internal process. But if you can forgive others, let go of your connections to it. Yep. The next step is getting into the present. If you're going to get into the present and actually be in the moment, you have to let go of the past to be there. So it's the key. And one of the problems with lots of mindfulness and meditation is people try to get into the present by simply meditating without going through the process of letting go. And that's just so important to do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the next step after that, once you've got into the present, is the idea of, okay, if I'm living in the present, what am I going to do with it? And that's like creating an intention for your life. What are you going to do with it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the next step. And then the step that we come to now, which is the law of allowing, is that once we start to have an intention and we start to try and enact it, very often what we then discover is the problems that we have in relationships. Now, relationships come in lots of varieties. There are physical relationships, social relationships, intellectual relationships, right the way through the spectrum. Yeah. Mm. But the things that we're looking at here are the relationships of love, which is attraction. And inevitably, as a part of that, that in brackets, we have sex, because sex is very often one of the biggest expressions of love between two people. But those aren't just the relationships we're looking at. So we'll go through it a bit at a time. But like I say, you need to read the chapter to make it all make sense with the presentation that we're doing here as well.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah.
So we're looking around here. If you're focusing on your now, if we personalize it, who do you love? Who do you love? And it may be that the person that you love is your partner. It may be that you're in love with Boris Johnson. It may be that you're in love with a rock star, a pop star. You know, it's like, what does that mean for you? It's like, if you cast your mind around, you know, who is it that you feel positive about? But then who do you feel negative about? Yeah, and if you feel negative about people, if you sit there, close your eyes, and there's people that come up and make you feel like they make you grit your teeth and you feel negative, that's when you have to go back to step one and start letting it go. Yeah, because these things are, okay, if we've been through that process, we're into the present, we're going to create something with it. Very often as we start to do this, this is the test. And sometimes we have to go back to the other steps to kind of redo them and check them out.
So it's not unusual for people to kind of start getting to this stage and then realizing that they need to go back to rewind a little bit.
Yeah. Quite common, because you're starting to actually put stuff into practice and that raises your problems, you know, which is something that we look at, like the creative processes that we go through.
We all have relationships, all of us, don't we, of many different kinds, whether it's the people we work with or we live with, or, you know, friends and family that we might see every week or two or a little bit longer at the moment. And they're all a readout of what we've been doing, right?
Yeah. And the thing is that we attract people to us that are of like mind, like birds of a feather stick together. Yeah. And if you look at the people around you, like your friendship group and stuff like that, or the people that you work with, they're telling you something about you because you were attracted to that. You know, so when you're at the dinner party and you're listening to all these people, you know, talking and doing things, what are you actually listening to? Are you listening to people that are being amazingly positive and having a really good time and isn't it fabulous and wonderful? Or are you listening to people that are miserable, moaning? You know, what's going on? Because that's going to tell you a lot about who you are. Why are you with these people? Yeah. And it is a case that when you do this kind of work, some people do get to the point where they decide they have to change their relationships, their friendship groups and stuff like that, because they're not serving them well. You know, they're just having, you know, more and more negativity, you know, which doesn't help. Yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah. So one of the things we look at in the course is the idea that there are two fundamental forces in the universe. One is attraction and one is repulsion. We're either being pulled towards things or pushed away from things. Now, those two forces, when we look at them emotionally, love is the force of attraction and hatred is the force of repulsion.
Mm.
Yeah. And if we're trying to create a world where we're working together and we have this unified energy, you can't focus on the hate because you just create more and more distance. Yeah. And if you look at anything, whether it's prejudice, whatever it is, the more you get into it, the more people come apart. Yeah. The more we get into the idea of love and looking after each other, the more people come together.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm quite deep into the world of Star Wars at the moment with my lads. I've been watching all the Star Wars movies.
All right, amazing, yeah.
Getting onto The Mandalorian now. It's the series on Disney, which is quite good, actually. Yeah, I was never really that into Star Wars as a young fella, but I can see the attraction, shall we say. But yeah, within that, there's the Force, there's the dark side, and there's the light side, isn't there, and what have you. Can we have a world which is purely filled with love, or do we always need repulsion and hate?
Well, if you look at the human parable, whether it is the Jesus story, whether it is the Sikh story, whether it is things like Narnia, Lord of the Rings, whether it is Harry Potter, whether it is what you're looking at, or the Game of Thrones even, it's like all those things tell the same story. It's about that battle between the light and the dark, between the good and the evil. It's between these two fundamental forces of attraction and repulsion. And the point would be, if you get into the deep spiritual philosophies, is that the point where those two things balance out, then the phenomenal world ceases to exist. That's the way it would be, that the world only exists because there's this interplay between these two energies going on.
Wow. Okay. I mean, yeah,
we're into deep philosophy there.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I'm bang into Lord of the Rings as well in the Tolkien world, and I've actually I've read the Silmarillion or most of the Silmarillion, which tells more of the history of Middle Earth, and
yeah,
it was thousands of years back in before stories of Bilbo and Frodo and all that. But I'm not sure what stories exist post Sauron, when the ring gets destroyed at the end of the Lord of the Rings, and when Aragorn returns to the throne and all that. So I'm not sure if Tolkien spent much time exploring that world where, there was no Sauron and there was no kind of hate in the world. And what?
I don't know. I mean, the assumption at the end of those kinds of stories is that, and it all turned into something that was good and right.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. Now, whether it is or not, it's like
Would something have? But I mean, we're all striving for happiness, inverted commas, in our lives, and kind of balance, or not balance, but none of us is. We all want to be happy, don't we? But does that mean it's somewhere in the world?
One of the issues in that is that if the things that make me happy are a benefit to other people, then that's a positive force, isn't it? But if what makes me happy is enslaving other people, then that's not a good thing for them, is it? So it's like the issues of what makes me feel good aren't necessarily the things that make other people feel good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this next section here, what we're looking at is that there's a relationship in all forms of energy. So the bit which is most common here is that if you look at a particle in physics, the smallest part you can get to, it has three components that in quantum physics are known as quarks. So those three quarks, they call them strangest love and charm were the first names they gave them. If you have less than three, you only have a state of energy. It's only when the three come together that it forms a solid particle. And that's a very relevant thing, because the issue about what we see as matter is actually just a collection of energy. So it's quarks coming together, creating particles. Yeah, and it's the balance of quarks that changes the different kinds of particles that are the basis of matter.
Well, I mean, I'm sure we've all seen under a microscope a picture of a cell, and there's that, when they're trying to, scientists are trying to inject something into the cell or take something out of it. It's weird, isn't it? Because it's like the cell is surrounded by something, and then they have to go into the middle of it. there is space around everything, isn't there? And it's
yeah. But there's space inside a particle. That's the weird thing. And there's, and if you were to get a human body and you were to take the space out, so that the physical bits of matter was all that was left, it would be like a little pile of dust on the floor.
Mm.
Because the majority of what a human being is made out of is space. The majority of what matter is made out of space. But that's a really weird thing to get your head around. You know?
Yeah.
Into quantum physics is a good fun thing to do.
Yeah, well, people, if you zoom out far enough on your microscope and look through a telescope, you'll see space, won't you, in actual outer space, and there's all the gap, the mad incredible distances between planets and suns and solar systems and galaxies. It's just, I mean, we're getting a bit, well, there's a few slides here of some crazy concepts, but yeah, the universe is a funny old thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So in the energy, which is described in Ayurveda, it would say that in any attitude or any way of being has the same three components as in the scientists in quantum physics have discovered. But in the Ayurvedic world, those three energies, they're in the doshas, they're called vata, pitta, and kapha. And those are how tissue is made. In the psychological world of Ayurveda and Samkhya, two philosophers, these three components are known as Sataguna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna, which is the directive force is Sataguna, and the energy force is Rajaguna, and the inert force is Tamaguna. But the easiest way for us to understand that with the Western mind is cognition, affection, and behavior. That's what you say in psychology. You could just say thinking, feeling, and doing. There's those three components. Now, if you look at anything, it has those three components in it. And that's something that is really useful to play with. And if you read the chapter, it goes into it and explains it a lot more. But you can always email me if you want to talk about it. It's an interesting place to be.
Mm.
Yeah.
Isn't there a film called Down the Rabbit Hole or something like that, where this stuff...
Yeah, yeah. There's an amazing set of... In fact, I have them just here. I can just lean over and get them.
Mm-hmm.
This is two sets, really. This is it's the quantum physics set, yeah. And it's two sets. One is what the bleep do we know anyway? It's that one, and the second one is Down the Rabbit Hole. So it's two sets, and it goes through understanding how you get from source energy to matter, and then how you get from consciousness to matter. And how consciousness can affect matter, but from a quantum scientist's point of view, really worth looking at those. Good results.
I'll try and remember to link to them in the show notes. But I do remember you lent me a DVD years ago, and it was fascinating.
Yeah, that'd be good to play to the kids actually, because a lot of it is in cartoon form to make it easier to understand. Yeah.
I mean, you explained it in terms of Ayurvedic stuff and kind of Eastern.
Yeah.
But this is starting to link up more now with kind of Western science and physics.
Yeah, yeah, quantum physics. When you listen to quantum physicists talking, they sound like the gurus of old talking about. They're using different words to describe the same kinds of things. It's a really weird thing to listen to, but it's amazing, yeah? So in that, just flip back to that slide you just flipped by. Let's just grab that. One of the things that's important was I was using the example was that if in a particle, the nucleus, the center of it, was the size of a football, then the electron field around it could be like 30 miles away. That's the kind of space that we're talking about in an atom. Yeah. But it's the electrons that are shared between the nuclei that actually hold all the matter together. And it's the energy that holds matter together. That's the bit that's important.
Yeah. Well, let's bring everyone back to the room then and link this into relationships and the law of attraction.
Yeah. So that in the same way that energy holds matter together, there's an energy, a universal bond that holds the whole of the universe together in terms of matter, but also psychology and emotion and physical relationships, emotional relationships. And one of the things is that that energy is so powerful that when it's pulled apart, the explosion is huge. We know what a nuclear bomb looks like and the destruction, because you're pulling apart one atom. But the same thing happens in human relationships. When you destroy relationships and you pull things apart, we say the idea that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. You know, well, the relationships, once they're pulled apart and that energy is released, is very often what starts wars and all kinds of horrible events that happen on the planet, because that energy is released.
Yeah. Again, I'll show my kind of highbrow TV habits here, but so I'm watching Married at First Sight, the Australian
version. Oh, right, that is one weird program. Yeah.
So, listen away for 30 seconds, because we're in series 6, which is the latest series.
Right.
There's two couples, and within those couples, there's couples that are cheating on their partners within the show. So we're seeing behind the scenes, but no one else knows what's going on. And you're just waiting for it to blow up. And obviously they should be honest at the start, but they resist that urge because they're trying for as long as possible to resist that explosion, that atomic. And when it does finally come out, you know, it's that long that the bomb has just been primed and just ready to absolutely go nuts. And, you know, it's like a nuclear bomb going off in the group. It's just, it's huge.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But in France, they actually have what they call crimes of passion. That if you kill somebody, you know, if you kill your partner because they're having an affair with someone else, that's treated completely differently to another kind of murder, because it seemed that there was some kind of emotional compassion involved in it, which makes it more valid in some ways than other forms of murder. Yeah, it's an interesting thing, yeah. So I'm in this slide here, we're looking at the idea of how things become attracted together to create higher orders. So that if you've got source energy, which is the basis of all things in quantum physics, that source energy devolves into quarks. And the quarks come together to form particles, and the particles come together to form matter. And then the matter forms elements, and those elements, like the chemicals and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. And then when those elements come together, they form organelles that are the tiny bits of cells, right? The organelles turn into cellular parts that become organs, and those organs become organ systems. And the organ systems come together to create bodies. And we all know what a body is because we've got one. Mm-hmm. But the amount of bodies that come together create what we would see as society, however limited we see our society. Yep. And then beyond that, if the societies all come together to create the human race. Now, if we're all working together and all is one and we're all looking after each other, it's an amazing, beautiful thing. It can all become one. If we're not, then it just breaks down into further and further components. You know, it's just bits.
Yeah, I guess... Yeah, bringing it back to where we are at the moment on planet Earth, as crazy and as terrible as the situation is, I mean, it's affected pretty much every corner of the planet, hasn't it? It's shown. I mean, there are signs, and you know, there's been some nasty stuff along the way as well, and we'll probably do a bit more. But there have been really positive signs of how well the whole planet is kind of pulled together, or at least attempted to.
And today I saw a news flash come down that was about, I think it was Ghana, got its first delivery of a vaccine, you know, delivered to them to help them. Again, we're in that system where there is enough vaccine for everybody. If we share it, we can all look after each other. You know, if we don't, then... You know, there's going to be vast swathes of humanity that just suffer.
Well, I mean, like I say, we are, and there have been more instances where global pandemics have spread rapidly. But I guess at the moment, this one, we're connected technologically by our phones and by our news and TV, and
yeah,
so news can spread so fast, can't it? And we can all, I mean, we can positively impact each other by, we have, on the whole, I guess we have, you know, it's been a bit up and down, a bit of a learning, steep learning curve, but it has shown how connected we all are, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's a really, really powerful thing. Lots of people will try and reject it, but there are many people that will be able to accept it. And that will be a very powerful thing in its own right, which is amazing. Yeah. So, okay, from this side, this slide, what we're saying is that everything we now know, everything that exists comes from source energy in the quantum world, as described as source energy. And we know that the whole of creation comes from source energy. But the thing we know about energy, from all the Einstein's work and all the quantum work, is that energy cannot be created and it can't be destroyed. Energy just is. When the universe first happened, however it happens, that's a whole another set of things, that it is in that state, but the energy can't be created or destroyed. All that happens is it changes form. It's like if you burn a piece of wood, the wood turns into carbon and it turns into ash and all the other elements that then get recycled around. It's a bit like the idea of there's only a certain amount of particles, of atoms in the universe, so that when someone's body dies and their body decays, those atoms go off into the universe. And it could be that you and I are composed of bits of Napoleon. We just breathed a bit of a dinosaur, because those are the elements that are around and in there, because they're not created or destroyed. They're just changing form. Yeah. And that is something which is really, really powerful when you start to think about it. The most powerful thing being that in the end, we are all one. We're all one energy. And that's my thing. I keep going on about, you know, print on my forehead. If we all look after each other, we're all right. It's such a simple thing to do. And yet we're not bright enough yet to be able to do it. But if we acknowledge that we're all one, that, you know, you are me, then we can look after each other. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to argue with it, really. I'm sure someone would try and find a way to argue with it. Maybe politically speaking, you know, there are certain brands of politics that kind of move away from ideas of society and as being like more than individuals.
But those things, to me, just take us further towards, it's that repulsive force that pushes things apart. Mm. You know, in the end, and this sounds really hippie, doesn't it? But like, in the end, all there is love. Love is the only thing that can bring us together, whether we see that love as gravity, whether we see it as some levels of attraction, whether we see it as glue, whatever it is that holds it together. If we do that collectively, then we can create a world of love. But that means that we have to actually get into what in the chapter, when you read it, is about the law of allowing. You've got to allow other people to be what they are. People aren't necessarily going to be what you want them to be just because you want them to be it.
Yeah, and so it's part of this stuff that we're teaching, or you're teaching here, that, well, first of all, I guess it kind of, it's trying to teach some form of like compassion, because ultimately, and I think maybe this might be in a slide in a bit, if you're harming someone else via something you've said or done, then you're actually harming yourself.
Yeah. And if you look at the concepts of karma, karma is about the consequence of action. That if you do things, there's a consequence. There's either going to be a good consequence or a negative consequence. But in the end, that reflects back on yourself. Yeah. So seeing yourself in others, that's the key, isn't it? It's like, if we're all one thing, you are myself, right? If I hate you or harboring negative thoughts or feelings about you or anyone or anything, I'm actually doing it to myself. And that there's so much evidence of people that hold bitterness, negativity, and hate other people have really horrible immune systems, and they can get really tense and get kind of arthritic, and, you know, have like those horrible internal physical experiences, because that's what they're manifesting emotionally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whereas people that are kind of, you know, much looser and forgiving and giving and loving have much looser systems, you know. Yeah. That's quite tough, isn't it? Because that means someone says, that means that you're saying that the fact that I've got this horrible illness is my fault. you know, and I'm saying, well, in some ways, yes, it could be, but I'm also saying that maybe it's not the fact that you have an illness, it's what do you learn from the illness, and can you change and get yourself better? Because then you've grown and developed. Maybe that's real too. Yeah, but we get into really difficult stuff then, don't we? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But one of the, I guess the important punchline in that is that you cannot love yourself if you hold any hatred towards other people. You cannot love yourself if you're holding negativity. Mm. Yeah, because you're blocking all those natural energies that are in the love.
So what, yeah? So what do you do? Because we all, I'm sure we've all, and even you, Sean, have had, I'm just thinking of trying to think of an instance where you've had a whinge about someone before we've come on air, or maybe you have seen.
No, would I ever.
Whining about politics or something. So what do you do when you start to feel those instincts or of potentially like negative thoughts about someone, or
what I actually do is when I'm holding a lot of negativity about another person, I do a meditation, which is a meditation of compassionate loving, right? And at the end of the kind of meditation I do, you have something called metta, which is when you're working with the positive energies that you've just been experiencing, and you start to share those out. So what I would do is I would send positive energy, whether you see that as healing or love or whatever, from my heart to the heart of the person that I'm seeing as negative, mm-hmm. in the hope that positive energy, if I can connect with them, will create positivity in them.
Right.
Yeah.
Does it work?
Well, all the evidence is that it does. Obviously, the other person has to be receptive, but it depends on how much positive energy they get. But in the quantum world, if you look at the intention experiment on that's a website and a book, then the experiments that they do are showing how you can measure energy leaving one person and arriving at another person at a quantum level.
So there's this page here now talking about hatred and negativity. It says when you hate or negative, it is as though you have taken poison yourself, whilst all the time expecting the poison to damage the object of your hate or negativity.
Yeah.
The only effect hatred and negativity has is to poison yourself. It is your choice towards self-destruction.
Yeah. So if I'm sat there thinking, I hope they die, I hope they die of cancer, I hope they die in pain in an evil way, all I'm doing is damaging myself. If I can go back to step one and say, okay, I accept that they are what they are and they've done what they've done, and you know what? I'm going to give all that energy back to them, and they need to do whatever they need to do. It's a different experience.
Mm.
Yeah. But it's a hard one to get your head around. And the whole of this course is a hard one to get your head around, because it means that you actually actively have to put energy into changing.
Mm.
Yeah, and that can be tough sometimes. Yeah?
I was thinking about, so imagine you had on your sofa there in therapy, so let's pick one of either Darth Vader, Adolf Hitler, or Sauron from Lord of the Rings. If you had them, one of them on your sofa, what would you start to say to them to try and bring them around? But I'm just thinking, as characters in stories, they're not necessarily like mega angry characters, and especially if you think of someone like Hitler, probably like the archetypal like evil person, most evil man ever. He's not someone who was actually that angry. He was in his head, he was thinking quite rationally, wasn't he? So How do you get in the mind of someone like that, who is being, you know, obviously massively negative and destructive, but isn't necessarily aware of it?
Well, when you start to look at psychopathy, like a psychopath, which is the kind of behaviours we're talking about, as somebody who lacks insight and empathy. And one of the problems is that when you're working with a psychopath, you can only work with them if they can connect with insight and empathy, because if someone has no insight, no empathy, they won't change. Yeah, they can't change because they can't see it, they can't feel it. Yeah, and people only change when they can see it and feel it. And when you work in psychiatry, there are some people where the kindest thing that you can do to them is just medicate them fairly heavily. So you subdue any of those negative tendencies, which make them safer to themselves and to other people. there are some people that can change, because when you have a psychopath, many psychopaths spend times in psychopathy, but they spend times in neurosis. When someone is in a neurotic phase, you can talk to them. When they're in a psychotic phase, you can only medicate them. Yeah, and I have seen people that have been quite psychotic start to change. I've seen that happen myself. But there's also, it doesn't matter. You know, it's that whole thing about you're working with someone in high security forensics or something, and they can't understand what the fuss is about. You know, it's like, yeah, I murdered them. They were a pain in the ass. You know, why shouldn't I? And they don't get it. And you can't actually work with someone like that. You can't do anything to change anything. Yeah. Wow. Because they see it the way that it is. And there aren't that many people that are like that in reality. You know, but there's lots of insensitive people on the planet, but there's not many that are that far up the spectrum. You know, there are millions of us or billions of us out here.
Yeah.
You know, most people are good people, really.
Yeah. And we could talk a little bit about language as well. I remember this from the course, actually, in terms of being super and hyper aware of some of the specific words you use or shouldn't use.
Yeah. Well, the first thing is that when people are talking about themselves, they don't usually say I, they usually use another word. So some people might say us as a collective, you know, us as a group wouldn't have that, would be, you know. And that can come out as a we, you know, we wouldn't do that, would we? You know, yeah. There are the people that say, well, you wouldn't do that, would you? And it's like when people are using the we or the you, they mean themselves, but they're devolving the responsibility to other people. So if I say, you know, it's not me, it's us, it takes the pressure off me, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a group identity. If I say you, well, you wouldn't do that, would you? I've just separated it from myself again. I've just disowned it. Because if I say I, me, my, and I'm actually owning it, well, I don't agree with that. You know, that doesn't work for me. Yeah, as opposed that doesn't work for us. It doesn't work for you. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's really subtle. And when you get into the good cognitive types, you know, usually in the up the aristocratic end, people talk about one. Well, one wouldn't do that, would one? Yeah. And all of it is a way of disowning responsibility from what we're saying. I can remember Billy Connolly making a joke about